This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Some people live inside a tiny little box.
Well, welcome into the program, everybody. Glad to be with you here on News Radio 1440, Tactics Radio. Thanks for joining me. You may notice that our camera setup is very different today, and there is a good reason for that. I have with me my first guest since I've started the video podcast here on Facebook Live, so thank you for joining us. Be sure to like, be sure to share. We want as many people to get interested in the show as we can. And don't forget, you can always call or tweet Tactics Radio at Tactics Radio, or you can call in 860-1440 if you want to take a call. So my guest this morning is John Cackleman Jr. He is a fellow missionary, and he's one of the ones that helped coordinate the trip to the Ukraine that we recently took. So welcome into the program. Glad to have you with us.
Thank you, Caleb. I appreciate your invitation of being here.
Yes, sir. So I understand that, I tell you what, before we get into that, I would like for you to give the audience just a brief overview of your relationship, your personal relationship with the Ukraine, how you got started in all this work, and sort of your experience there.
Okay. I went into Ukraine in 1994, and immediately I was struck with the wonderful character of the nation and the spirit of the people. You are not going to find a greater nation of sincere, honest individuals as you'll find in Ukraine. And you saw that yourself.
Yes, sir.
Everybody that I've taken to Ukraine from America, they've always been just awed at Ukrainian people. Mm-hmm. And especially those in the western Ukraine, that's the country part. And
right, which we went to the Ivano-Frankivsk area, which right. would be over in the west.
Yeah, and they're just good country folks, and they would sacrifice anything they have for you. They'll give you the last food to be a good host or hospitality for
right.
a guest. Wonderful people. And if you look strategically, the country of Ukraine is very important. It is not coincidence that whenever the Soviet Union existed, that most of their nukes were positioned in Ukraine, pointed mm-hmm. toward the west. You look at the history of the world and combat conflicts, and you'll find that Ukraine has been right in the middle all the time.
And part of that is because it's right there on that border between Asia and Europe. And so because of that, it's a very strategically important location.
Right. And so it occupies a strategic position in a number of areas for our globe. And you look at the people there and the strategic position they have, and it's just really an amazing experience to go and to visit and to give them an opportunity to become partners with us in this work has been a wonderful blessing for us.
And I can say, too, from my personal experience, having gone on the most recent trip, that it is amazing to me how quickly you will connect with and find similarities between you and people that live literally on the other side of the world. Yeah. I mean, it took us, 15 hours to get there, something like that. And so it's about as the opposite the side of the world as you can get.
Yeah. Every time I go, I'm amazed. Coming back on the first few trips, I would take videos and I'd show the videos to those that were supportive of the work and interested. And one fellow in Kentucky made the comment. He says, "Well, they look just like us, except they talk different."
Yeah.
Well, and then on the next trip, I was in Ukraine. I was in one of the villages and the schools, and may have been the first American that they'd ever seen. And so they said, "Well, you look just like us, but you talk different." So
it's the same wherever you
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
And I know that one of the schools that I visited. And now Ansley was the real star. She's one of the girls that went to the trip with us because they had never seen a female soccer player and they were very interested in that. But when we went there, the school kids just wanted to take selfies with us. They wanted to have conversations with us. They actually stayed after class when they weren't being, when they didn't have to stay there to have some conversations with us. And they spoke actually pretty good English. And so, I mean, just some of the nicest people you'll ever run into. And I mean, they have the same concerns you do, family concerns, you know, the jobs, school, whatever else it is. There's really just it really opens your eyes to the fact that we're not very different from people, even from a very different culture.
Right. And to me, the greatest heartbreak in Ukraine is the corruption that exists. And and there is a tremendous problem that exists in Ukraine. We've been shipping humanitarian aid in since 1994, and we have shipped tons. We've shipped 305 cargo containers of humanitarian aid. And you would think that was a lot, and it is. We're not the only ones. In working with Department of State, Department of Defense, we've shipped many, many tons in. But the Ivano-Frankivsk Church heard of a group, a family in Lugansk. They had three children, and these children were all school-aged children. But they each day, only one child would go to school. And so the school contacted the parents, and the parents said, well, we only have one pair of shoes. And so each day, those shoes will be taken by somebody else. Well, the Ivano-Frankivsk Church was contacted, and we sent shoes to that family. Now, you and I take for granted the shoes we have.
Sure.
But here we have, in real life circumstance, in today's time, a family with three children, and only one could go to school because they only had one pair of shoes.
Which is astounding, because Ukraine is not like a third world country. It is a modern first world European nation, and they're still having these kinds of problems.
Exactly. And the problem that explains why that is happening is the problem that I'd like to discuss today, and that is There is such an ingrained corruption within the upper levels of the Ukrainian government that whatever we're doing, it just doesn't seem to be effective, because we'll get through, but we're having to fight tooth and nail to crawl and claw our way to get shoes to people that need shoes, or food to orphanages where the children are hungry.
Yeah, and having been a part of that in the recent, I guess it would have been about 2 months ago now that we went, it breaks your heart some of the circumstances you'll find over there. I know that I was with the traveling band, so I got to see a lot more than most of the people that went on the trip. And one of the things that we looked at is there was a hospital that the main thing that they requested, we thought that they were going to request like basically brand new drugs, top of the line medical stuff. They said, we want a washing machine. This whole hospital, which is about the size of the – it's a little smaller than the Prattville Hospital, just to give people an idea of the scale of it. They had one washing machine, and not an industrial-sized washing machine, one regular, like, Whirlpool washing machine, and that's for the whole hospital. And so there's a tremendous need going on over there. We visited one of the orphanages that was there, and the kids were just thrilled to get some bubble gum and some candy and some new socks and underwear, which was some of the primary things that we brought. And so it infuriates me that despite this great need, that there are people, government bureaucrats over there, that are not going to let you help people unless they get their palms greased. And that just is unconscionable to me, that you would want to profit off of charity.
Exactly. And again, that illustrates the dominating control that I fought in Ukraine since 1994. Every time elections come up, they say, oh, things are going to be better after election. We've heard that, haven't we?
I was about to say, that's not exclusively a Ukraine problem.
Yeah. So they've learned that from the American political scenarios.
Right.
And so this time we're facing obstacles that we've never faced before. And corruption just seems to march unchallenged, and they flaunt their thumb at the rule of law in Ukraine. And right now in America, our Congress is debating the budget,
right,
the appropriations. And if corruption is taking place with the few dollars that we're sending through these containers that they're shipping, just imagine whenever the U.S. sends in billions of dollars, the feast that these greedy bureaucrats are having from that. And so I challenge the listeners today in America to contact your Congress and the senators and representatives and tell them to challenge appropriations being made to Ukraine, because the money is being sent in good faith, but the goodwill and generosity of America is being insulted, and it's not getting through to the people.
Well, and that's what's really sad, whether we're talking about foreign aid, which I have my own issues with, and we've talked about quite a bit because a lot of it seems to go to waste. Whether we're talking about foreign aid or talking about private charities like we're doing, either way, there are people that are trying to get a portion of that. And that's money that could be used to help people that are actually needy, as opposed to trying to just get the humanitarian aid through. And it's a added and unnecessary cost caused by a government that wants different people at different levels to be able to profit off of the suffering of others. And it really is just absolutely unconscionable, both from a government standpoint, but and also from a moral standpoint
right.
as well.
The issue of corruption has been addressed in Ukraine repeatedly. Like I said, ever since 94, I've fought that. And so let's fast forward to where we are today. In 2017, the Ministry of Social Policy of Ukraine, which is under the Prime Minister Grozman, decided they were going to attack corruption. So the Ministry of Social Policy is the ministry in charge of allowing humanitarian aid into Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
So the Ministry of Social Policy appointed this task group. And this task group was charged with scanning the applications to make sure that no corruption is taking place.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that is, I've told them what happened. They're just repeating the Inquisition, because the Inquisition was set up with good intentions.
Sure.
We're going to keep truth pure. We're going to try the heretics. We're going to make sure that nothing untoward or corrupt happens. Well, we know what happened with that, and the Inquisition became an instrument of terror and became actually the practice of it became worse than that which they were to oppose.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one was right, but the answer was not in the Inquisition. Well, the Ministry of Social Policy and Prime Minister Grozman has decided now that they've got their own Inquisition that is set up in the form of this task group.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to this task group. I've appeared to this task group. And they are a bunch of smug bureaucrats that smirk and insult the American goodwill. And I told them that, and their response was just a nonchalant attitude.
Is this the same group that alleged that you don't exist?
Yeah. The amazing thing.
I remember you saying that when we met with, was it the vice governor
right.
that we met with?
Right.
We met with him while we were in the Ukraine, and I was there in the room, and they were, this group had alleged that you do not exist. So you can't say that anymore. We have video proof. John Cackleman Jr. does
Here
exist.
I am.
So there, we've solved that little issue, hopefully.
Well, I think they understand that I exist now.
Okay, well, that's good.
But the issue was, I was sending in these containers, and they wanted to stall, because if you stall the containers, then you're going to incur storage fees, demurrage.
Right.
You're going to incur penalties and fines, because Ukraine says, okay, when humanitarian aid gets in, it needs to be distributed within a relative reasonable period of time, which I understand that.
Yeah, actually, that's not a bad rule. It's
but
just,
the problem is, what now they're saying, you have stored this, and so now you have to pay a penalty because you didn't distribute it on time. It wasn't our fault. It was their fault. But we're the ones getting fined for it.
Right. Basically, they're getting their money either way. They're either getting it on the front end where they're asking you for a bribe, or they're getting it on the back end when they incur the penalties for storage.
In fact, I was told that very statement. I was given message, and I received it through three different sources, that if I would pay $5,000 to some unnamed person in Ukraine, I would have no problems, I would have no questions, and I would be able to import as many humanitarian aid containers I wanted. In fact, it wouldn't have to be humanitarian aid. It could be commercial cargo, but I could import it as humanitarian aid if I paid $5,000.
No,
now, if you don't pay that, they said, you're going to pay, but you will pay more in fines and penalties than you would have. So the easier way is to pay us the old protection rackets that
it's exactly what the mob does. Yeah,
exactly. And so Ukraine bureaucrats are basically charging a protection fee, which is extortion.
Right.
And there are people that are paying it. I've talked to other NGOs and shippers, and the response was, well, in Ukraine, you have to pay fees. So we pay them.
See, that just drives me up a wall, because I'm thinking about, having been to the Ukraine myself, how much good $5,000 could do in that country if we were able to use it for that. Because, like I said, I gave the story about a washing machine. I remember we visited that one medical facility that we've really made a lot of improvements on, the clinic, which that whole town, that whole area didn't even have before then.
Right.
We visited that facility for special needs people that our money's gone to do so much good. And, I mean, $5,000 could do so much good in an area like that, and it just burns me up that these people would rather it go to them as opposed to going to the needy. And actually, as you well know, God is harsh on people, but if you're looking especially through the minor prophets and some of the major prophets, there is nobody he gets more fired up about than people that are taking advantage of the poor.
Exactly. And that's a point I made when I appeared before the task group.
Mm.
And in fact, you know, I told the task group, God curses those that offend the poor and the widow and the orphan. And I was sitting across from a fella, and he just gave me this smirky smile, like, we're better than God. We know better than what he's going to do. And that didn't really sit too well with me.
No, I imagine not.
But I...
You probably stayed calmer than I would have,
well,
honestly.
You know Tanya, my interpreter. Tanya said...
Very sweet lady.
She was on pins and needles because she didn't know how I was going to respond. But let me just show you an example of how ridiculous some of these charges are. In a container that was loaded in the U.S. and shipped over, we loaded it in Houston, Texas.
Right.
We loaded it in August. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And
now,
that,
is this the one that we had the buckets that people in the Montgomery area went to donate?
No, that's another one.
Okay, this is a different container.
Right. We can talk about that next.
Sure.
But this was loaded out of Houston, Texas, August 8. And this container had clothing for the poor, 15 pallets of adult diapers that the hospitals are begging for, and it had boxes of food. Okay, we shipped three of these containers into Ukraine.
Right.
Here's the story of one of those containers. It was destined for Odessa. Well, it comes before, the application comes before the task group, and the task group starts their interrogation, the inquisition. And they said, well, we look at these documents, and you've got a letterhead here, but then the shipping documents have another one. We operate, our 501c3 is Life Resources International. And so I will ship either through Ukraine Missions, Churches of Christ International Relief, or Life Resources International. I've been doing that since 1994. Never has that been questioned, but suddenly this task group decides we need to question this. And so we had to redesign our letterhead so that it agreed with everything that this task group says. Now, bear in mind, this task group has no legal foundation. They have no legal authority to demand anything.
Mm.
All right. Another thing is we had in Ukraine, you have to have a stamp. Or you did, you don't now. But a stamp is to be given at the signature to validate that is your signature.
Okay.
All right. So the stamp that I was using had been Churches of Christ International Relief, Ukraine Missions. Well, suddenly that stamp that's been used since 1994 is not acceptable to this illegal task group.
So, in other words, they changed the rules in the middle of the football game.
Right. It's kind of like a fellow said one time about getting his political opponent to be specific. He said it's like nailing Jell-O And that's
to
what
a wall, yeah.
these guys, you can't hold them down. You change one thing and then they'll change 15 others. And so it's a never ending process. And during that process, here you're accumulating storage, demurrage, and you're going to be fine because you are not distributing this within a reasonable period of time. Mm-hmm. So we had to redesign the stamps because the task group said it was illegal. And then the task group says, we want the documents to have a wet stamp and a wet signature. Now, what that means is they want the original stamp and the signature. That's what they mean by wet stamps and wet stamps.
Right. In other words, you can't print it off on a printer. You actually
exactly.
have to physical stamp,
you can't
physically
scan
stamp it. Yeah.
You know, you can't scan it. And today it's recognized that a scan is really better than the original because somebody can modify that original.
Right.
So, okay, here we go. We got a new stamp. We got new lettering. And all the time, this cargo is sitting with clothes and diapers and food for people that are in great need.
Mm.
All right, so I got the stamp. I got the signature. I gave the wet stamp, wet signature, went down here, and I sent it FedEx. Cost me $300 send those documents. $300.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then it still wasn't acceptable, still wasn't approved. They wanted to see me. That's fine. I was glad to. I wanted to see them.
I bet you were ready to see them
and
at this point.
And so I made a trip to Kyiv for this.
Right, the capital.
Right. Won't calculate the expense in that. But again, task group, you required it. Here I come. Well, during this time, the consignee that was receiving this good, and the goods were going to be distributed all over Ukraine. Again, they're diapers for hospitals, for adult diapers, food for those that are in need, and clothing for the poor. The consignee was billed $3,071 of demurrage because the task group had stalled and stalled and stalled. The port charges, the container was still in port, and the port charges was $1,580. And so we were finally able to move the container out of Odessa port to Kyiv.
Mm-hmm.
Still isn't released yet. And the actual cost in Ukraine, this is not counting the shipping cost getting out over there, which was close to $6,000.
I was about to say that had to be considerable.
All right. The shipping cost, I mean, the cost that Ukraine has billed me, $4,651 in charges. Now, by the time you factor in all this other, remember that extortion promise? You're going to pay more if you don't pay us the $5,000. Well, here we are.
I was about to say, they're only about $400 short at this point.
Yeah, but that's not calculating all these other variables. And in addition to this, my consignee had to travel from Odessa to Kyiv three times to appear before this group. Three times.
Mm.
So there goes the other amount that brings
right.
us up to $5,000. And this is just one container. Now, the container that we loaded out of here in Montgomery.
And people may remember you could go down to Dalrata Church of Christ and actually donate items to these containers.
And Montgomery turned out great. In fact, all of Alabama turned out in a wonderful way to help us. That container was loaded in September. Okay? It still has not been considered by this task group. And this is almost December. Now, it's been in port, it's been unloaded, it's been in storage, but we haven't been given approval to distribute because this task group isn't considering things. Well, I've asked people to start writing our U.S. Congress and writing anybody, and they have, and now this task group has seen some of these letters, and I received an email today saying, the task group has seen these letters and they've decided to put the application for that Montgomery container on discussion for tomorrow.
Okay, well, that's some progress, hopefully.
Yeah, but why?
Yeah, exactly. You know, so this is making a difference. People actually are considering it because of the letters.
The people's voice makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
One letter to a congressman or U.S. senator President Trump has said America is not going to stand for the goodwill and generosity of its citizens to be insulted. Well, here we have it in the task group in Ukraine.
Yep.
America, we need to speak about this. You need to contact your Washington folks and tell them what's happening with your tax dollars. We're in the midst of appropriations. And in Alabama, Senator Shelby is the chairman of the Appropriations Committee.
That's right.
How fortunate that is, folks, that here in our state, where we're trying to address this thing, our U.S. senator is in charge of appropriation. He needs to know, and the committee needs to know.
Well, I would encourage everybody, especially since he's a senator, which means everybody in the state and everybody that would be listening to us can contact him. If you're listening to us from a different state, contact your senator. Maybe they can do something. And I would send a letter to Doug Jones, too. I mean, surely, whether you have some political disagreements with the guy or not, this should be something that everybody, Democrat, Republican, ought to be able to get on board with.
This is humanitarian aid. It transcends political parties. It
right.
transcends languages. It transcends national borders.
Mm-hmm.
But it's being stopped by greedy bureaucrats in Ukraine's Ministry of Social Policy.
So just one more time, what people can do to help out with this.
All right. They need, number one, you need to become active. You need immediately today to contact your United States Senator, United States Representative. You tell them what's going on, and I will provide you documents. We can put up my website address, or I can make it available, the documents that I have, and I've got stacks. We haven't even talked about them yet.
Well, I tell you what, this what you've got right now, send that to me, and I'll put it out at Tactics Radio on Twitter. I'll put out the links to it, and I'll also do so on the Facebook page that you're watching it on right now. So if you're interested in this, we'll have that information available. I'll probably add it to the video description as well.
Great. And as you read this, I want you to read something that is actually happening. This is not an imagination. This is actually happening, and in fact, it's been happening ever since the formulation of this task group in the middle of 2017. That's what I need U.S. citizens to do. We have loaded containers all over the continental United States. I would love for people in every state of the Union to address their congressmen and their senators, and also send a note to President Trump about it. Those of you who are outside of the U.S., I've been in contact with people in Canada. There's a large group of Ukrainians that live in Canada. You speak out. We need you to do it. Your country, your motherland, is in desperate need. I have talked with those within Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
You have access to internet, and I hope you're listening to this, and I hope you'll pass it on to others. You have a responsibility as a citizen in your country to uphold what is right and what is just. Your national rule of law is being violated by these people in Kyiv. Don't let it happen. Don't sit back and allow apathy to ruin your country. I know people are saying, well, Poroshenko now has proclaimed martial law.
Right. That happened this week.
Exactly. And some are saying that proclamation comes because the elections are coming up and he knows he's going to lose. Well, in America, we heard stories similar to that as well. Thankfully, those didn't happen in America, but we're seeing it in Ukraine. Another point in Ukraine you've heard this week was the Russian naval activity in the Strait of Kerch. Don't let them distract the criminal attitude and arrogance of Kyiv by saying we're being victims of Russia.
Well, now, if anything, I would think that the tensions that are growing between Ukraine and Russia, which are serious and we've discussed them on this program, if anything, this would mean that there will be more need in the future for humanitarian aid, and that would be more reason for them to expedite this process.
There is, Caleb. We have sent in our shipments, we have sent containers for those that were wounded in the war. There have been many that have been killed. We have taken
over 10,000 now.
We've taken care of the widows. We've taken care of the children. We have helped those that were disabled. We have given prostheses to those that lost limbs. I mean, there is tremendous need. And the bureaucrats in Kyiv, the task group, when I appeared before the task group, I told them we'd help the war wounded. Well, the same arrogant smirk was given in regard to that. Ukraine, they don't care about you. They care about themselves. And that's the travesty of this. We need you to speak up for your country.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. And we do stand with the Ukraine, not only with the threats that they're facing from outside, but unfortunately the domestic threats that they are facing inside their country, trying to get rich off of charity and get rich off of poor people that need this aid. So I appreciate so much all that you do for the church, both here in the city of Montgomery and also in the Ukraine and abroad. Thank you so much, Brother Kackelman. We'll be back in just a second. We do have problems here at home. We do have problems that are right here in our own backyard here in Birmingham. And of course, we are going to talk about that just to give you an update, because there's a couple things that have developed overnight in the mall shooting. And I know we've been spending a lot of time on this, but I mean, unfortunately, this is, it's a national story now. It's not just something that's going on in the state. There are people on the national level paying attention to this. So I wanted to highlight some of the new developments that have come to light. We still don't have video yet. That's hopefully coming within the next few days. But last night there were protesters that marched against Mayor Frank Barranco's Brocato's, I think that's how to say it, his home. And so the mayor of Birmingham, his house actually being under siege. I don't know if it's kind of a similar thing, but it seems like the similar sort of scare tactics that were used against Tucker Carlson. And so that particular mayor being attacked, and the protest was organized by a guy named Carlos Chavez Jr. Man, I'm having a hard time with the names here. You would think that I would be a little bit better at it, but that's how the protest started. Now, I'm not sure exactly where the law would stand on this, because here's the irony about this. If you are doing this to someone's private home, then you are trespassing and you are breaking a law. If it's a governor's mansion that is owned and maintained by the city, then honestly, it may still be trespassing, because you can still trespass on government property. That's certainly true. And they may have been trespassing according to the definition on here. But at least with that, you are going onto a government property, a government building. And so while you have a right to protest, and I think that government space is a legitimate place to do that on, then at least this one has some semblance of rationale behind it. I'm not justifying it, because if they were acting crazy like it appeared that they were on camera, that's still harassment. And again, they may not have been permitted to be on the governor mansion's grounds at that point. I imagine that they weren't. And so because of that, that can also be an issue with them protesting. But nonetheless, at least this makes a little bit more sense than some of the protests earlier, where they were trying to make some kind of statement to the people driving on Highway 31 and in the mall. That made no sense, because they have nothing to do with what happened here, even if the worst comes to pass and it turns out that this police officer actually did kill somebody that had nothing to do with the shooting. So anyway, that's the latest that was coming up. And the same guy, Carlos Chavez, he said that they were planning on blocking the whole interstate, which again is a crime. And I still don't understand how that helps your cause or ingratiate people to your cause. That just ticks people off. That actually makes them less likely to be sympathetic to your cause. But nonetheless, this was his big plan, and he was talking about it the other night. So the protest that was being brought up, they issued this warning. They said, "We come in peace, but when we're met with force, we're going to respond and act accordingly." Okay, that sounds like a threat of violence, that if police use force, which they may have to do if the crowd gets rowdy, that they're going to attack police officers. Again, right now, this is just words. It hasn't actually taken place, hasn't actually happened yet. We have yet to see any protesters attacking people. They've been disrupting, they've been breaking laws, because they have been on private property, they have been trespassing, they have been blocking roads, which is, again, against the law. But we have not seen an actual violent clash with police officers, at least not yet, and that is a good thing, and that is something that should be noted. But he continues on with this. He says, that's just a warning to the Hoover Police Department. Again, the language of a threat. He says, they've been kind of cooperative thus far because they don't want to kill any more black men, so they got to do what they got to do to stay clear right now. Okay, here's the thing. I agree with that statement, but if you said it, it kind of breaks down the entire basis of your argument. Because the entire basis of this movement is predicated upon the idea that this police officer, who we still have no idea who it is yet, could be a man, could be a woman, could be white, black, Hispanic, Asian, we don't know. Because we have no idea who that police officer is. But the whole idea that your protest is built on is predicated on the idea that these are bloodthirsty, racist cops that are just looking for opportunities to kill black people. And you just said that the reason that you haven't had any problems with the Hoover Police Department so far is because they don't want to kill any black men. Well, it's one or the other. Either they're looking for opportunities to kill black men, and that's the reason that this guy EJ was shot, or that's not the case, and that's the reason that they're staying clear here. You can't have it both ways. Either the cops are systematically racist and they're looking for opportunities to take out people they don't like and people of minorities, or they're not. But you can't have it both ways. You can't explain something away by saying, well, the cops are they're afraid of killing black people and that's why they don't want to get involved. Well, if that's the case, then why were they perfectly okay with getting involved in this? And he tries to kind of, I don't know if he understood that what he just said made absolutely no sense or not. But he continues on and makes no sense as he continues on. If these cameras weren't here, it would be a completely different story. Yesterday, we blocked traffic on Highway 31. If the cameras hadn't been there, someone would have been beaten, somebody would have been taken to jail, some of us would have been under the jail. Now, if police officers had to use force to remove a violent mob from a busy highway, I am perfectly okay with that, but that is not what happened. In fact, I'm a little ticked off that they didn't do that, that they didn't push those people off of the roadway, because you don't punish the average citizen that has nothing to do with this, just trying to get home to his family, when you're in the process of protesting, and that's why that is illegal to do. But nonetheless, let's just take what he's saying in a vacuum and sort of extrapolate it here. So he's saying that the reason that police officers didn't do that was because they didn't want to have to deal with the media fallout and they were worried about all the cameras that were around. Yeah, well, the police officer that was involved in this shooting, again, whether he was guilty of being trigger happy or he was guilty of being trigger happy because he was a racist, or the guy was completely innocent, was fearing for his life and was absolutely justified in shooting this guy that was, according to reports, brandishing a firearm around. Any of those three scenarios, whatever the case may be, which we still are unaware of at this time, any of those three scenarios, if that is the case, there were cameras on him. There were cameras on him everywhere. In fact, we found out yesterday that this was a uniformed police officer wearing a body cam. He knew his body cam was on, and he knew that he was in a mall, which has lots of security cameras everywhere. So again, your logic doesn't make any sense. If your movement is predicated on the idea that this was just a bloodthirsty, racist cop that was looking to kill a black man, then your previous statement makes no sense, because he had cameras on him then. He knew that he had his own camera on his chest, and he also had cameras all around him looking. So if your justification for this was, well, the only reason the police weren't beating people, the only reason the police weren't looking for opportunities to take down black people is because there were cameras all around. Well, again, then the very basis of your movement is a lie. And I don't know if it's a lie or not, but again, we don't know. We don't have all the facts. And this is yet another example of somebody that doesn't have all the facts trying to form an opinion here. So it looks like we have a caller on line one. Let's go ahead and go straight to the phones. Good morning. What's your name?
I'm John. How's it going?
I'm doing pretty good. So what's your assessment of this guy last night that organized this protest at the governor's mansion, or sorry, not the governor, the mayor's mansion there in Birmingham, who was saying that the only reason that police officers weren't beating people was because there were cameras around?
Yeah, well, that's one of the idea behind this is that it is assumed that police officers are looking for people to beat up, looking for people to shoot, and you go in with that mindset ahead of time, they're defeated from the beginning with anything that happens. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
There's no way to win with that. And I don't think that's the case at all, else there would be a lot more people being beat up, shot, and that kind of thing. It wouldn't be as rare as it is.
Well, see,
if that were the mindset.
And that's the difference in forming a conclusion based on evidence and forming an assumption, and then anything that happens just confirms that assumption you already have. You're right. In their mind, they were walking into that situation thinking the cops are already racist. Therefore, anything that they do, whether it's attacking people or not attacking people, regardless of what they do, their motivation was racism.
Yeah, it's implied that police departments all over the place say, okay, let's think about how we're going to get the next minority person because we hate them. Who are we going to shoot? Who are we going to beat up? How are we going to go about this? I mean, isn't it implied that way?
No, it is, and that's exactly what I was saying a second ago. If your assumption is police only do not do this because there are cameras around and they're worried about the political or the media fallout, then the whole basis of their movement doesn't make sense, because the police officer, whether he was justified or not, we don't know, that shot this guy in the mall had cameras on him. He literally had a camera on his chest and had cameras all around him in the mall. So if cameras were what stopped it, then the basis of your movement is based on why.
Yeah. Well, it's sad that all of this will have to play out, and they move so slow in releasing anything from the law enforcement side, and I guess they have to look at that with detail before they can. It will be quite a while, don't you imagine, before we actually find out what happened?
I don't know how long it'll be, but I think the logic here, and I could be wrong, I think the logic here is they don't want to tip off the guy that they're still looking for, the gunman that's still at large, about his location. And that's just a theory. I'm not pulling that from anywhere. That's just a hunch that I have, so don't hold me to that. But I think that that's probably what's going on. And because of that, I think that if they actually find the gunman that they haven't located yet and bring him in, I think as soon as that happens, they probably release the video within hours of that event taking place. So I think that's the reason they're staving off releasing it, because we're almost a week away from the event now, and it feels like we should have some security footage by this point.
Yeah. Well, there are people that are looking for incidents like this to, I guess, champion their cause or get attention placed on it, that kind of thing. So when you have that, it's always going to be like this. And the sad part is that no reasonable person wants anything like this to happen, both outside or inside that police department, no matter what race they are. They don't want things like, they don't want a person like this to die.
No. No,
that's,
I mean,
ridiculous.
If nothing else, let's just assume that the police officers really are terrible people and they really are in it for themselves. Even if you make that assumption, why would they want to go through all this trouble and spotlight themselves to where they could get caught and get into trouble?
Believe me, there are meetings and training that is taking place to make sure things like this don't happen.
Oh, rest assured that is taking place. Well, thank you so much for your call, John,
sure,
from Millbrook. I appreciate it. And always good to have your commentary. So, speaking of commentary, there is another bit of commentary that I want to share with you. This is an interview that was done by Ashley Knight with WBRC in Birmingham, so a local affiliate there, who's doing this interview. She's conducting it with a woman in the Galleria, and this woman is the mother of one of the business owners there in Galleria, one of the stores there. She owns that business. And so this is her commentary. This is her takeaway on what was going on over there.
What are you thinking of all this protesting going on?
Well, I feel like my heart goes out to the family. My heart goes out to the young man. My heart goes out to everyone. I'm hurting too. A lot of the businesses here are also hurting. This was very traumatic for everyone here that worked that night, we included. There's a lot of black-owned businesses inside this gallery mall. There's a lot of diversity inside this mall here. And we all want justice for everyone that was injured in this incident. That includes those that have not been mentioned, that got injured from being stepped on and trampled on. We want the right things to happen, but we want them to happen happen peacefully without affecting other people's lives. There are people that work here, and these are their jobs, and this is how they take care of their family. We want justice for everyone. I want justice for that young man, but at the same time, we got to come to a peaceful resolution on how we're going to do this without it actually tearing everyone down. My heart goes out to him. I have children too, and I have teenagers, and I couldn't fathom what his mother is going through. And I had the opportunity to see the scene myself. And it's a very difficult thing, and I picture that in my head every night in terms of what we need to do to fix this. But we have got to grab a hold of our men, no matter what color they are, and teach them about safety in terms of how to resolve issues without pulling out weapons. We got to get to the root of the problem. And until we do that, we're going to lose a lot of our young people as right. casualties of other people making bad decisions right. and their behaviors, not thinking about how their behaviors affect everyone, no matter what color they are.
I don't even have anything to say on that. I'm a professional political commentator. Been doing this for a long time. Those of you that have been fans of mine know I've been doing it for years. I don't think you're going to see any commentary from me, Matt Murphy, Del Jackson, any of the political pundits like myself in the state of Alabama than that right there. I'm serious. And this is a woman that is not against the protest. She actually says in that video that she supports the protest. She just doesn't support it in the way it's being conducted. And she's not even talking about whether or not the police officer was racist or not, anything like that. What she is doing an overview on is how it is affecting businesses, particularly her daughter and other businesses in the mall, and how it's negatively affecting businesses actually owned by black people. And so this is the irony in all of this. When you hear people out there protesting and shouting Black Lives Matter, well, apparently those black lives don't matter to them. The lives that they're interrupting the commerce of black business owners that they had nothing to do with the shooting. They're just out there trying to make a living, have a nice Christmas for their family. That's all they're trying to do. And this is the issue that I have with a lot of the protest that's going on here. And just kudos to that woman for giving a perfect microcosm of the issue that's going on over here. That was as good a commentary on this situation as you're going to find, and she did it in a minute 30 seconds. I don't have any brevity. I could never do that. But she starts out, this is why it was such a rhetorically perfect way to phrase it, and she included all of her points in it. She starts out with empathy for people involved. She's like, look, I can't imagine what it's like for those families. I feel sorry for the families that are involved. I feel sorry for the people around here, and I understand that the community as a whole, because of this event, is hurting, but that's no reason to inflict injury upon other members of the community. I mean, that would be like if somebody walks up to you on the playground at recess and jacks you in the jaw, you turn around and slap somebody else. That doesn't make any sense. It has nothing to do with the person that actually wronged you, and all that does is make you an offender. I realize it's not exactly the same crime. That's why I use the difference in being hit and being slapped, but the point is, it doesn't make any sense for you, whether you're right or not, and we still don't know if they're right or not, to go and inflict injury upon other people, unconnected third parties that have nothing to do with the situation that you're talking about. And she says that she wants a peaceful justice for everybody. Well, that's what I want. That's what everybody, I would assume, actually wants, except for the rabble-rousers. A peaceful justice. I want the justice system to work. I want it to have its day in court. I want to actually see the evidence. And then I want to make an informed decision and an informed opinion on what I think about this case based on the evidence. And that's exactly what everybody should want. Peaceful justice. Now, it is possible that justice is that this cop acted incorrectly in a way unbecoming to a police officer and needs to face a legal penalty. And if this guy did what people are accusing him of, then he absolutely ought to, at bare minimum, lose his job. And I wouldn't have a problem with this guy going to jail for a very long time. If he actually committed murder, then I'm sorry, that's what the law says. And that's what should happen. But it is also possible if we see the evidence that comes out and see what it's based on, and it is also possible that justice is what has already happened. It is entirely possible that justice was that young man threatening somebody's life and being shot down. If that is what actually took place, then that is justice, because he reaped the benefits of the decisions that he made. Ergo, justice did take place. I know that there are going to be people that are upset about that or don't want to hear that, but when somebody does wrong and threatens somebody else's life and their life is taken to eliminate that threat, then that, by definition, is justice. Justice isn't just, I want my side to win regardless of what the evidence says. Justice is either a punishment or a reward for something that has taken place based on your actions. And so justice may have already taken place, but peaceful justice for everybody is exactly what we should be wanting. And she calls out the hypocrisy of what's going on here, which is, why aren't you worried about the black people here that own businesses that are trying to actually make a living for themselves and their families? You say you care about black people and their lives, but you seem to only care about these black people and these lives, which are politically expedient to your message. And so there is a bit of hypocrisy that she highlights there. And this is really the best part of the clip, the root, where she talks about getting to the root of the problem. The root of the problem is we have to teach our young men to resolve conflict without violence. That's at the root of the problem. Because again, maybe this cop acted incorrectly, maybe he didn't, but you know what? He wouldn't have even had the opportunity to act incorrectly if the fight hadn't broken out. If we didn't have young men going to a mall actually on Thanksgiving, sadly enough, that are so bound and determined to get a good deal on a pair of tennis shoes, they're willing to shoot and kill each other over a pair of shoes. That is a far larger problem than the other stuff that we're talking about here. And I'm not trying to downplay if there actually is racism in our police officers. Yes, that's a problem. People with authority like that, that have to deal with people of all ethnicities and treat them fairly. Yes, that is a really big problem. And I'm not trying to downplay that if this is an actual case of that happening. But isn't it a larger society problem that police are being called in because there are young men that see a pair of tennis shoes and they believe that is more important than somebody's life? Them getting not even free tennis shoes, just a good deal on tennis shoes, is more important than the life of their fellow man. That's a heart problem. That is a problem that we are not teaching our young people the value of human life. And when you consider that we are killing millions upon millions of children every year, it's not hard to see why our society does not value life. When we are murdering people in the womb, and I'm not trying to bring everything back to this issue, but I'm using that as an example of how we as a society, we as a people, no longer teach people to value human life. And that's one of the ways, that's just another example, along with this example of these two young men believing that a pair of tennis shoes at a cheaper price than they would normally be priced at is more valuable than the life of another human being. And she's right, that is the root of the problem. So a fantastic commentary by this woman. And as usual, unfortunately, people are acting on emotion without giving any thought to the actual consequences of their actions or how it affects others. And that is true of these people that are going out protesting and hurting business owners and honest working people. And it is also true of what started the problem in the first place. These two men that let their emotions get the better of them and their desire and their greed for a physical object, in this case tennis shoes, and they acted on their emotions and their anger and their wrath and ignored their reason and logic. This is a woman that's thinking. And I applaud her for actually doing some time to ration out the situation and give some good political commentary on it. So bravo to that woman. And I sincerely hope that this protest doesn't mar the Christmas season for you and your family, and that the businesses that are there that are suffering are able to make ends meet despite these insane people that are just acting on their own emotions. And they're really protesting to make themselves feel better more than anything else, more than actually affecting a change. I really hope that it doesn't affect these business owners, regardless of what color they are. All right, we're going to go ahead and go to the daily dose of stupid.
Now you messed it up. You're stupid.
Okay, so today's daily dose of stupid, boy, this one is a doozy. This one's pretty good. And I saw this over the holiday break, and I just could not resist making this the subject of at least one daily dose of stupid. So, Doug Jones, we all know him. We all have our opinions on him. You may like him, you may hate him, but he is the senator from the state of Alabama. But there is one person that believes that Doug Jones is at least doing one really good thing for Alabama, and I don't know where his political leanings lie. I don't know if he's a big Doug Jones fan or not. It seems to be based on this, but there's a guy who is the works at the Alabama Tourism Department. He is the director for that department. His name is Lee Sintel, and he has credited Doug Jones, that's right, Senator Doug Jones, with a recent bump in tourism. So we've seen a pretty big bump in tourism down to the Gulf of Mexico, Gulf Shores, Orange Beach, and Alabama tourism in general. And because of that, this particular director of the Alabama Tourism Department says that the election of Doug Jones is what caused that. Not anything Doug Jones has actually done in office, just him being elected because the contrast would have been electing Roy Moore. And so he says that Doug Jones being elected has been great for the state's tourism. And this is his rationale. So we'll go ahead and read the quote. I think the average person would be surprised to know that something like an election could have a potential impact on the tourism industry, which is obviously non-political. But we had lots of calls and emails in the month leading up to the election of Senator Doug Jones, people saying we will never come to Gulf Shores again if the election turned out the opposite way that they wanted it to. So in a way, people vote with their money when they go on vacation. Okay, so there's a couple of things here. First of all, in observing whether or not this claim is true, have you ever once, and I'm guessing there are probably some that will answer in the affirmative, but have you ever once considered the political affiliation of a senator when taking your vacation? Because I don't know about you, but I've never decided to go to Florida for vacation and thought, I really like Marco Rubio, so that's the reason I'm going to go to Florida. I was going to go somewhere completely different, but I think I'll go to Florida because Marco Rubio is their senator. And I like Marco Rubio. He does some things I don't like, but overall, I think he's a pretty good senator. But I have never once in my life thought, I really like that senator from Florida. I am going down there. Maybe there's some people that have, but I'm guessing this is not only not the majority, I'm guessing it is an incredibly small minority. Incredibly small. And I've also never not gone somewhere because I didn't like their senator. For example, I've never thought, even though I've only been to California once and it was in the airport, so I don't even know if that counts. But I've never thought, you know, I was going to go to Disneyland for vacation. But dang it, that senator, Dianne Feinstein and Kamala Harris, I can't stand those guys, so I'm not going to California. Now, there might be other reasons that I don't go to California, but it's not because I don't like their senator. And so it's just laughable that this guy thinks that Doug Jones is the reason for the uptick in Alabama tourism. So let's apply some logic here. Let's apply a little bit of logic and reason. Stretch your brain just a little bit. At best, this is anecdotal evidence. At the very best, this can't be backed up by statistics. And yet this guy is saying, well, Doug Jones is the reason we're having this surge in tourism. That is the definition of anecdotal evidence. Some people told me they wouldn't come here if Doug Jones were elected, which again, people say junk like that all the time. I think it's Rosie O'Donnell who has pledged every single year that if the Democrats don't take the House, the Senate, and the White House, then she's moving to Canada. What's her name? Barbara Streisand has said similar stuff. Jim Carrey said that he's moving back to Canada. And it never happens. That's just people talking. But let's just assume for the sake of argument that these people were legit. There's no way to prove that they would be in nearly big enough numbers to account for a bump in tourism, but let's just assume that is 100% correct. If you're observing the actual wording of the letters that he's claiming he got, he said it's people that will never come to Gulf Shores again if Roy Moore is elected. Well, it the very best, if that is true, even if what he's saying is 100% true, that still wouldn't account for a bump. It would account for a stagnation. So in other words, it would account for you not losing ground, because these are people that presumably already came to Gulf Shores for their vacation, now saying that if Roy Moore is elected, we're not coming anymore. Even if that's true, it still wouldn't create a bump. It would create a stagnation. It would keep people from deciding not to go somewhere else. That's all it would do. So, unfortunately, logic and reason apparently not the strong suit of this Lee Sentell guy. So let's take a look at this real quick, because I do think that the bump in tourism for the state of Alabama is actually a big deal. It is something that shouldn't be just thrown away lightly. But let's look at the actual explanation for why that may have been happening. So this is a graphic. This is taken from a tourism research. You can actually see the source there in the bottom. Trading Economics, they do research on things like tourism, how much money is spent. So this is tourism in the United States of America as a whole, the entire country. You'll look at 2016, you'll see a little bit of dip there, and then it starts climbing. So in other words, the entire country saw growth in tourism from 2016 to now when Doug Jones was elected, which would lead you to believe what? That Alabama is seeing a surge in tourism exactly the same as the rest of the country is, partially because the economy's better, partially because there's less unemployment, and so there are more people that have the ability to take a vacation, partly because some people are seeing extra money that they didn't see ahead of time. We were reading a report about this just a few months ago, that now people that were doing staycations and having to stay home during vacation are actually going places specifically because they got money from the tax break, and they've been getting raises on a pretty regular basis now because of the better economy. And so which is more likely, that all of a sudden that there are not these people that were writing to him, random people across the country that thought Alabama just elected Doug Jones, let's go to Gulf Shores? Or is it far more likely that this boost in tourism in Alabama was just indicative of the overall economy, just like it was in the rest of the country? I'll let you be the judge on that one. I think it's pretty obvious, the one that I think that it is. The whole country has been on an upturn since 2016, and tourism is no exception to that. So that being said, let's go ahead and jump to the chaplain's report.
In 1775, the Continental Congress created the Chaplain Corps. Under the command of General George Washington, each soldier was required to attend worship service every Sunday. While other armies advanced on their feet, Washington's troops advanced on their knees. It's time for the Chaplain's Report with Caleb Colquitt on tactics.
Today's Chaplain Report comes from the Book of Ruth, and I think that this is appropriate, especially considering, even though we didn't have time to get to it today, the really dire situation that is going on in our border. And I wanted to leave you with this thought. Keep in mind that Ruth is a sojourner. She is somebody who is an Israelite, and she married a Moabite man and went to live in Moab, and then her mother-in-law came back to Israel. And so this is a story about people crossing borders quite a bit. And there is such a wonderful message. First of all, they agreed to all the laws and followed the laws of Moses and the laws of the land in the country that they were entering into. But second of all, and this is really important as well, it's just such a beautiful story about people. It's a story about people helping other people. And that's what I love about the Book of Ruth. And remember that Ruth, despite being somebody that was a far off, is somebody that is in the lineage of King David, and by extension, the lineage of Jesus Christ. And so Ruth, in this particular statement, we'll look at her little speech that she gives to her mother-in-law. And keep in mind, this is her mother-in-law, that she is going to give this declaration of her commitment to her. And it's important to remember that this is not Ruth's mother, it's her mother-in-law. Her son, Ruth's husband, has died. Now, how many of you would have this kind of relationship with your mother-in-law? Then she said, Behold, your sister-in-law, this is Naomi speaking, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law, basically telling Ruth to go back to Moab and be with her people. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to turn back from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything, but death parts you and me. When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her. And I love this story about Ruth, because you've got Naomi there, an Israelite, and her Israelite sons have married these Moabite women. And so you have a split family. You have a family that has a cultural difference. They have a difference in their religion. These women were presumably pagans. I don't know if they were now, but they certainly were back when they were married, back when they were living in the land of Moab. And yet this family comes together, and their ties are so strong, and their commitment to each other is so strong because it's based on God and because it's based on the same principles and having the same values, that this woman, to whom she has no blood relation, is saying to her, I will go where you go, and my fate is going to be your fate, and my God is going to be your God, which is a testament to Ruth and the kind of person that she is and the morality that she displays. But it is also a testament to Naomi. And the reason that I say that is, for Ruth to feel that strongly about someone to whom she has absolutely no blood or cultural ties to, the only ties that her husband, who is now deceased, brought them together, that means that Naomi had to be a pretty good person too. She had to be somebody that was moral and somebody that cared for other people and somebody that, if we're looking at it from her vantage point, was so good that Ruth desired to be with her and desired to be more like Naomi. And so while we're looking at and admiring Ruth's commitment to Naomi, which we ought to, and her conversion to Judaism and to live amongst the people and to acclimate herself to their culture, I think it's also worthy of note that we notice that Naomi had to be a pretty good person to warrant that kind of loyalty. She obviously treated her well, she treated her with respect, and she was a great witness for God and his love and what he has done in her life and the way that he guided her along her path and her sons as well, whom she raised. And so it is amazing that we can use our family ties, we can use the ties that we are closest to be able to bring them closer to God if we ourselves are willing to be good, moral, just people that also want to be closer to God. Because we should be the happiest, most joyful, most exuberant, excited people in the world because we have had our sins cleansed from us. We have a relationship with Christ. And even though this is before the time of Christ, this is about a relationship with God, and this must have been the kind of person that Naomi was in order for Ruth to see, wow, if God did that in Naomi's life, then I need to go with her. I need to be a part of her culture. I need to cleave to her and make her God my God. This is the kind of effect that living with God has on people. It makes us like mirrors. That we're not the source of the light. There's nothing particularly special about us. I tell people all the time, Christians are not better than other people. We have a sinful nature. We have desires and lusts of the flesh and lusts of the eye, just like everybody else. The reason that we're different is because we've learned to be different. The reason that we're different is because of the transformation that God has made in our life. And so while we can't produce the light, we're kind of like mirrors. We can't actually make the light, but we can shine that light from the real source, God, onto somebody else, and then they can in turn reflect that light onto others as well. And so that's how God's light through us can reach other people. And that's the kind of example we should be striving to set every single day. We need to be like Ruth and have that kind of loyalty and passion for our fellow people, for our family members. But I think it's also important to note that we also need to be like Naomi, somebody that shines God's light on other people so that we can be a blessing to them, and they can in turn have a desire to be like that and to follow God and to bless others as well. Stay the course, friends.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.